We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
On today's episode of the Pride Podcast, we have our Detroit Lions versus the Seattle Seahawks final review. We're going to talk about this game in a little bit more detail and also crown this week's Oopsie Doopsie and Baller of the Week. We also have some discussions on some guys who we could possibly pick up in free agency next year. And also we have some draft talk on episode 222 of the Pride Podcast.
The seventh pick in the 2021 NFL Draft, the Detroit Lions select Penei Sewell, tackle, Oregon.
He's going to run it straight in! Jared Goff!
Touchdown, Detroit Lions! DJ Hawkins, they did it! They tied it! They're an extra point away from winning this game! Oh, baby, how big is that?
Yo, what is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Pride Podcast, episode 222 on the Blue Wire Network. I am your host, Tyler, joined by my two guys, as always, Mr. Malcolm Hart, as is according to his StreamYard name, and Mr. Pierre. We are here on a Monday night after the Lions and Seattle Seahawks game. How are you boys doing, first of all?
Woo!
I am doing well, man. It just sucks that it's cold outside and the Lions lost yesterday, but I'm okay.
Well, with that Lions loss, you have now guaranteed yourself a top two pick. So for the crowd that is right, all in for Team Tank, you guaranteed yourself a top two pick. Not number one. You could still get the number one pick. So depending on what happens this Sunday, if the Lions lose this Sunday to the Green Bay Packers and the Jacksonville Jaguars somehow pull an upset versus the Indianapolis Colts, you will have the number one pick in the 2022 NFL draft. But the likelihood of that happening, very low, because the Colts are actually playing for something for this Sunday, and the Lions might potentially be playing some backups this week. And this is actually the first time from the betting lines that the Lions have been favored in the game, is this next upcoming game versus the Green Bay Packers. So the Lions are actually favored. Yeah, this is the first time they've been favored at all year.
Favored? ESPN has a Green Bay -3.
I saw the lines this morning, 1-point favorites.
I think because Green Bay came out and said they're going to play Rodgers and Adams.
This is when everyone was assuming that Jordan Love was starting and all the bad guys.
Okay. So, yeah, it's changed right now.
So wait, Rodgers is playing?
That's what the reports say. I don't know how true they're going to be when it actually comes to Sunday.
Yeah, right now I'm looking at it, it's +3. They're -3, Green Bay.
Yeah, but it was +1 to open up. That was the first line, +1. For the Lions, the first time they've ever been favored all year, so that's something. They guarantee themselves a top two pick, so I would call that a success. Depending on, you know, who your preference is in this draft, it seems like the Lions are really looking at one of these edge rushers, if that's Kayvon Thibodeau or Aiden Hutchinson. We'll talk a little more about the draft at the end of it, but just wanted to bring that out there, that the Lions have guaranteed themselves a top two pick. So you guys could really cheer for your team this Sunday if you really want to, because a win doesn't really affect all that much, because you're still going to be two at the really at the very worst. So, all right, let's talk about some injury news and some COVID news that we know about. I'm going to kick it off to you, Pierre. what do we learn this Monday as far as the COVID cases?
All right, we have a lot going on here. Let's start with so Vitae, Brackers, Josh Reynolds, and Brack Wright are all back. So they'll be at practice probably on Wednesday. We'll see. Austin Bryant, Taylor Decker, and Penei Sewell are on the COVID list now. And also Rodney Smith from the practice squad was placed on the COVID list as well. So if you want to go into the game next week starting Jared Goff without Decker and Sewell, yeah, I don't know about that.
That is a really tough situation because then at that point, I mean, it's Monday, so you have time to activate these guys throughout the week. But if those guys aren't ready, I don't know how wise it would be to put Jared Goff in that game, especially if you're expecting him to be at the very least in your quarterback room next year, because you have no choice. You have no choice but to do that. And he's more than likely your starting quarterback in 22. A very high likely shot he's your starting quarterback in 22. So I don't know how wise that would be if Penei Sewell and Taylor Decker can't go on Sunday to throw out Jared Goff out there. But because you could be looking at a scenario where it's Matt Nelson and Will Holden.
That is a setup. Like, could you imagine being that backup? Like, imagine being David Blau, and they sit the three quarterbacks in a room. They're like, "All right, look, we're out of our tackles. We're not going to play our starting tackles. So Jared Goff, you're going to be here next year. So we're not going to play you. Tim Boyle, you played last week. We're not going to do it. So it's up to you, David Blau."
Well, something to keep in mind, the protocols have changed a little. We talked about this a couple episodes ago. I think it's like 5 days if they're asymptomatic or something, they could be back with the team. Mm-hmm. So Decker and Sewell and Austin Bryant also have a chance to play. But as of right now, the Lions are preparing to be without them.
Yeah.
So what do you do? Who do you play in this situation?
Do you have options.
If Goff is healthy to play, do you put Jared Goff out there with no tackles?
I don't know. Do you put Big V back at tackle, put Kramer in at guard? Do you put Will Holden and Nelson at tackle?
It just sounds like a scary situation for a guy you expect to be your starting quarterback next year for a game that means nothing to.
I don't know what they would do, but I think if Goff was healthy to play, they'd play Goff. I don't think they'd sit him.
It's possible. I just don't know. I just think that's like a
I think the knee might be a little more banged up than we think it is. If Penei Sewell and Taylor Decker can't go, this is the word we're going to hear around Allen Park. I think the knee is going to – there's going to be some more, you know, more news about that knee coming out on Jared Goff. So
we'll see.
I would play the safe game, play the precaution game. If those two guys aren't out there, I mean, it sucks for a guy like David Blau because it's a tough situation, but hey. Twitter said they want to see David Blau. You'll get David Blau, maybe.
Or Tim Boyle.
If you want Tim Boyle. I mean, either guy. Neither of those quarterbacks are going to be in your team next year. So.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, it sounds messed up, but at the end of the day, it is a business, and that's how GMs look at it. They're going to look at it, who's going to probably be on my team next year, and more than likely, God bless Tim Boyle and God bless David Blau, but they're probably not on this team next year.
Right.
And if they are, it's nothing more than a preseason body. And them getting an opportunity.
Yeah.
So
That's possible, man. I'm just worried. I'm not worried. I'm interested to see how they're gonna do this if they don't have no tackles. It doesn't seem ideal, like, to throw Jared Goff out there with no tackles. And you know, Green Bay does have a pass rush, so that might be an issue.
This is something to monitor.
No, Za'Darius Smith, but yeah, you still got Rashawn Gary.
But yeah, we definitely have time. We definitely have time to talk about this, you know, for the pregame show and the preview. But yeah, these injuries, man, they're piling up.
All right. Well, let's get into this game. Was there any injuries to speak of this Seattle game, or we leave it out clean?
Not that I know of. I don't know if I missed something. Was there an injury yesterday?
I'm trying to think. Was there an injury during a game?
I know Seattle side, Bobby Wagner got hurt, but from Detroit side, nobody. There was no one here. What's the little injury?
What the hell was that, Tyler?
You know the Fox the Fox injury music. It's like I was doing like the more the intro, but it's like
That's totally the intro, Tyler.
That's the intro, but I was trying to think. I can't hum the injury music, but yeah.
I don't think we had any injuries during the game. I think we actually.
We left out clean,
yeah.
I mean, we'll see on the injury report when it comes out for the preview for the Packers if, you know, there's anything to report on, because obviously they'll have to report to the NFL if there's any injuries, and we'll know their limitation or any status of what they did in practice. So that is something to keep up for. But as far as right now, we don't know any of the injuries of what happened in the Seahawks and Lions game.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, but Malcolm, I'm going to ask you the money question. Did you rewatch this game?
Yeah, I actually did, man. I actually rewatched this game, man.
And did you gain any entertainment the second time watching it around?
No, I didn't find that entertainment that you had that game, Tyler. I still didn't find it. You know what? The second half, they made it interesting. But that first half was so brutal, bro.
The first half was terrible.
The first half was it was bad. I believe the score was, what,
31-7.
31-7.
Yeah.
It was rough, man. And we had no answers. Defensively, we had no answers for Penny or DK Metcalf, man. It seems like we just had no answers. So it was a rough game to watch in the first half. Second half, they made it somewhat of a game. They tried to make it a game at least. It was fun and entertaining until all those turnovers started happening with Tim Boyle. That's when it was just like, ugh.
That's when I was about to get done with the game. I was like, when the injuries started to pile up, I'm like, okay, I'm done with it at this point. I got my entertainment. We could end the game there. But when we had that little moments where we were getting some offense going and, you know, we were doing some fun plays and stuff, that's when I was giggling. I was laughing and I was enjoying the game. I was just sitting back and enjoying the game. And we had some moments. It wasn't like the Broncos game for me. The Broncos game, I was just ready to turn off the game. I didn't want to watch that game. This game, I had some entertainment even when we were down big.
Yeah, I mean, we made it a two-score game at one point. They made a two-score game. They made it somewhat interesting, you know, and that's something that you wanted to see from this team, that they, you know, that they're going to fight and they're going to try to be in it. And we had some guys, some dogs out there that were just playing with all their hearts the whole game. You know, we had Amon Ross St. Brown, you know, with a 100-yard game. I think this is his first 100. Is this his first 100-yard game?
Yeah. Amon Ross St. Brown?
Yeah. Or am I tripping? Am I tripping?
I'll look for you, but keep talking. I'm pretty sure he got one during one of those, you know, those weeks when he was
For some reason, I feel like he got close to 100 yards. Like, he had like 91, 80, you know, 90. He was getting close, but I honestly think that this was his first 100-yard game.
So, but, Yeah, you're right. Yeah, because when we played Atlanta, got 91. When we played Arizona, it was 90. And then versus Minnesota, was 86. So, yeah, yeah, it was his first 100-yard game. Yeah, he's. I guess I was just looking around. He's really dangled really close to 100.
Yeah, because he's getting a lot of receptions, and he's getting a good amount of yards. So he was getting close to 100, but this is his first 100-yard game. He's just a dog, man. Yeah, I mean, he's just a guy who's very fun to watch. So glad he's on our team. So, I mean, it was fun watching him. If I had to pick another guy, Cordero Hodge had probably his best game as a Detroit Lion. I think it was it his birthday? I think I saw something on Twitter about him. Something about him being his birthday.
How the hell would I know if it's Cordero Hodge's birthday?
I'm not sure if it's today. I'm not saying it's today, but I think it was like.
How the hell would I know that?
Either the day before the game or on the game or a day after the game. Some day around there, I think it was his birthday. But he showed out like it was his birthday. And he had one of his better games as a Lion. So that was fun to watch, seeing Cordero Hodge have a big game. But besides those two. Everything was rough.
Offensively, it was really rough in the beginning. You started off the game, you forced a punt from Seattle, and then Detroit gets the ball. Then you had the 4th-and-1 opportunity. You have an opportunity to take the lead. You could have taken the field goal, and that's something we didn't talk about in the live show. I'm curious to hear you guys' thoughts. So, just another Dan Campbell 4th-and-1 decision, decides to go for it, have an opportunity to take points. The ball is
it's on their side of the field. They ran a pistol formation, and they ran it. It was a halfback dive to
Jamal Williams
in the pistol formation. I remember that play. I have no problems with Dan Campbell going for it in situations like that. Mm-hmm. When he's on the other side of the field, and it's 4th-and-1, 4th-and-2, mm-hmm. I don't mind those plays. Those plays are the plays that you probably should go for it. You're what 2-12-1 at that point. You know you're playing the Seattle Seahawks, even though it's 0-0 at that time. But yeah, I mean,
it's on Seattle's 29.
You're on Seattle's 29. I mean, you want to end that drive with a touchdown versus a three. So I get it. If this was in reverse, say that we were on our 29 yard line, I would be pissed. We've seen Dan Campbell do stuff like this in the past where he'll do it, like he'll go for it on his side of the field. Those are the fourth down going for on those drives. Those are the ones that drive me crazy. And we haven't really seen those as much. I think he's been dialing back on those as far as he's not doing as much. So that's a positive. But I'm with the fourth down play. And I get why they didn't convert, because Jason Kabinda's out. They ran a pistol, halfback dive with Jamal Williams. So it's tough.
So I bring the question out there because analytics, I would assume, I don't know what the analytics tell you, but I would assume they probably recommend 100%. You to go for that 4th-and-1.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think that was an interesting decision. I expected them to go for it. And I remember I tweeted at the time that I personally would have kicked the field goal, take the points, take the lead. You're on the road versus Seattle. You just forced a punt, so your defense wasn't getting like dashed like that in the first drive, so you didn't really know how the game was going. So I would have taken the points. You're on the road. But I understood the decision of that. And kind of like you, Malcolm, I don't mind that because it is what it is. It's like if you get it, you keep the drive going in. A 4th-and-1, more than likely or not, you are going to convert that. Like the likelier chance of you converting that is probably higher than you missing that. They obviously got unlucky. They got stuffed and didn't get the first down. Drive got killed. Seattle comes back and they score. Whatever, right?
Yeah.
But I think when you have a good football team, I think a lot of good football teams probably go for that 4th-and-1 over there. But I think it just all matters really how the game is going and, of what you are playing against, and I kind of agree with what you were thinking. You're playing the Seattle Seahawks, a team that could score points, obviously. So you obviously do want to end drives with touchdowns if you want to give yourself a chance. But I'm going to ask you the question. You understand the decision, but do you agree with the decision? Like if you were
me,
the head coach, and you're standing there, it's your call. Are you making that decision to go for it, or are you kicking the field goal?
No, I would have did it. I would have went for it. I would have went for it. Probably, this is what I get with as far as do I agree with the play call. You're going to do a pistol halfback dive with Jamal Williams. If you're going to go 4th-and-1, I like them to go big. maybe try to go heavy, but you're missing guys. You're missing Jason Kabinda. You're missing all your tight ends. So I get it why they maybe went that route. Maybe try to, I mean, do you put the ball in Tim Boyle's hand to convert that fourth and one maybe in a bootleg? I don't know.
So do you maybe factor in all those situations? You don't have your fullback. You're missing all your tight ends. Maybe just take the points. Would you have been disappointed or mad if they trotted out the field goal unit?
No.
Yes.
Pierre said, hell yeah, I'll be pissed. Well, we need points, god damn it.
Do I know why? 3 points isn't going to do shit against Russell Wilson at offense when you have like a bunch of practice squad guys on defense. It really isn't.
Wait. We didn't have a bunch of practice squad guys on defense. This is the same thing.
What I'm trying to say is you have Fatu Melifanu starting like his third start. Yeah, Will Harris starting his third start. You have Dean Marlowe starting.
Yes.
You have linebackers.
I understand your point. Yes. Your it's a young defense, inexperienced defense. But this is the same defense that they put a lot of trust into the last 3 weeks. And in that Cardinals game, they made a decision to trust their defense when it came down to the game. And like you said, the defense is mid-place. So I can't use that as an excuse because that was the same defense outside of Michael
Brown. All I'm trying to say is, it wasn't really the same defense because guys were in, guys were out. All I'm trying to say is, when you have that many injuries on offense and on defense, I think you just kind of have to go for it, dude.
I think Dan Campbell is the type of guy who he has his mind set already. I think for example, if he's starting to drive, he's probably telling himself, look, if we're in position to go for it, to try to end this with a touchdown, that's what we're going to do. You know, there's some coaches who say, hey, look, you know, we're going to play the drive. And if we get in field goal range, we're going to just kick the field goal and just get points. But I don't think Dan Campbell's that guy. I don't think he ever goes into any drive thinking, all right, if we get in field goal range, we're going to kick the field goal.
Outside of like maybe a half where you have like one timeout and, you know, that's the only reason I could think of it.
Yeah. There's a situation like that where, you know, like, all right, I could end with some type of points.
That's the only way.
Let's do it. But I don't like if it's anything fourth and three and under, I see Dan Campbell going for it. If it's like a fourth and eight, yeah, he's going to kick the field goal, you know, something like that. But anything under 3 yards and he's in your territory, I think he looks at the record and is like, look, we only have 2 wins. So I don't see a situation that he's going to kick the field goal when it's under 3 yards. I just don't see him ever doing that.
Malcolm, record aside, I think that's who he is. Even when they're going to be really good, you look at the Ravens are like that. The Chargers are like that with Staley. I think even if they're really good, they're going to go for these. They're not just going to settle for three.
I think he'll look. It depends. Like, say if he has a really, really, really good defense, there's gonna be drives that he's gonna say, look, maybe let's put more on our defense. Take what's given to us. But I think you gotta feel the game and see what's going on.
Even Campbell, right from the jump, he was aggressive. Like, he didn't really know what he had right from the jump, right when he got here. I feel like that's his.
But I just think I think in the beginning, I just think he didn't know what he was doing. Not saying he didn't know what he was doing, but I'm not saying he didn't know what he's doing, but I just think that he was just doing it premature.
Yeah. No, I'm kind of with Peter. I think this is just kind of what Dan Campbell is. I think he's gonna put I think he's gonna play out the situation, obviously. You know, you gotta see what to go for. But you know, Peter's right, teams are very analytical, the Chargers or Baltimore Ravens especially. This is what they do. This is I don't necessarily always agree with it, but that's what we have in our coach, and it's we kind of have to accept it because that's his identity. That's what he's going to be. I think even if we are a good team ever, I think that's his identity. You know, I think if in 2023 the Lions are, I don't know, 10-5 and whatever at that point, 10-5, let's say, in whatever week that is. I still think Dan Campbell goes for it in that situation, that same exact situation that we're talking about right now.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I those situations when you're on the other side of the field and it's anything under 3 yards, I don't care. I don't mind going for those.
Oh, but I think what we're talking about, you're talking about the stuff that we happen, you know, we're going for on our side of the ball. I don't think
that's I hate that. That's terrible.
That's not even analytical. That's just stupid.
Yeah, no, there is actually. I mean, there is some analytics too.
You're trying to tell me what they when they went for when they played Cincinnati or when they went on it when they played Minnesota. That's smart. That's just not smart to me. I think that's just looking at the record and saying, "Hey, what the hell do we have to lose?"
Or just being too aggressive.
Like, I don't think good teams do that. I think
let me say this, man. Like with the fourth downs, we saw last year Patricia lose so many freaking fourth or second half leads, right? Fourth quarter leads. That's because he was conservative.
Yeah.
If you're aggressive, all hands on deck, all game, yeah, you might screw up a little, but at the end of the day, you're a better football team because of that. Like your players have that mindset, right? They have that mindset. Our coach loves going for it. We're going to win this game. We're going to be aggressive. The opposing team knows you're going to be aggressive. Like, it just makes you better, in my opinion.
As long as you're not doing it in your 30, I don't care.
I mean, he hasn't done that recently, so.
Yeah, he hasn't done it recently. That's what I'm saying. It's a positive.
No, that's definitely Dan Campbell looking at the record and saying, what the hell do we have to lose, I think. More than I think that's his identity. I think this stuff is his identity.
Yeah, whoever I mean, other side of the field, up. Anything under 3 yards, I don't mind that. I don't mind that. Go for it. Under 3 yards, you're on the other side of the field. You're on their, 20-yard line? 29-yard line? I don't care. At the end of the day, worst case scenario, you don't get it. They're on their 29-yard. Whoop-de-doo. You know, I don't care about that.
Yeah, I mean, you always want to end with points at the end of the drive, so it does suck when you don't get it.
When it's a long drive. Those are heartbreaking. When you have like a 10, 12 play drive and it ends with nothing.
When he gets to the goal line and then.
As a fan, that hurts. So I'm pretty sure the players are like, what the fuck?
Yeah, when he gets to the goal line and you turn over the ball on fourth and two or fourth and three, like that's.
Those long drives, hurt.
Yeah, but when you think about it too, though, like you're most likely your defense probably going to get a stop there too. So
it doesn't hurt as bad. Yeah, field goals do hurt though in that territory as well. Like, points definitely help, but field goals still do hurt in that territory as well when you're kicking.
Nothing hurts even more.
Yeah, when you're kicking 21-yard field goals when it's not a game winner, it hurts.
As long as your defense can get a stop, I mean, doesn't.
Well, that's if you're going for it, yeah. But I'm saying if you kick a field goal, you're
or even if you kick the field goal and your defense gets a stop, I mean, it doesn't hurt that bad.
Yeah, but
you could drive down there.
Yeah, but if you're kicking a field goal, you're giving the team really good field position again because it's just a kickoff at that point. Yeah, and it's just reset.
If you look around the league, we're not really seeing teams kick as much as fourth and goal, fourth and two, fourth and one. They're pretty much going for it, unless it's like a coach who's like super conservative.
Nobody.
But most of the time, teams are going for that. Like,
no, and I like that. No,
they don't
like
settle for the points. Yeah. I mean, 3 points doesn't really do much. When you're there, just try to score. You don't get it. Your defense, whether they're on the 2, the 3 yard line, whatever. Your defense probably didn't get a stop.
Yeah, I think it just really depends on the situation. Sometimes I think sometimes coaches get a little too aggressive, and I think they take field goals for granted sometimes because a field goal could still win you a game. I think people
It adds up. It adds up. There's teams who won games making nothing but field goals. There's teams who won games like that.
I know this is definitely a hindsight. It's always 20/20, but I don't know if you guys watched that Chargers and Chiefs game on Thursday night, like a couple weeks ago. It was like 2-3 weeks ago. It was a really good game. Chiefs won in overtime, but Staley went for like, I want to say 3 to 4 fourth downs that they ended up with 0 points on every single attempt that they just left 12 points right there.
Yeah.
And that could have won a football game.
It adds up.
It's 12 points. I mean, that's almost 2 touchdowns.
It adds up. It adds up, definitely. So if you're going to do it, you got to convert.
I got a question for you guys. All right, say the score is 20-21, 3 seconds left. You take the 2, go to try to win, or you go to overtime?
Tyler had this discussion the other day.
I know what I'm doing. I want to see what you guys are doing.
I got to feel my team out.
Yeah. Me and Tyler had this conversation probably a couple.
We had it after the Atlanta game. I said if the Lions, let's say they went for that 4th and 6. Let's say they score a touchdown because then at that point they have an opportunity to tie the game with an extra point or go for 2 and win the football game. In that situation, I might have went for 2 because of the Lions' record in that circumstance. So I'm not against that. But when I see like the Ravens do it, and right now look at those games. I know it's aggressive comes with, you know, the pros and it comes with the cons. Yeah. Right now that costs the Baltimore Ravens 2 games because they try to go for a 2-point conversion to win a game. And right now they're going to miss the playoffs by probably 1 or 2 games.
But like, this is, this not, is, it's the right call. If they convert that, they win those games, right? So you could also say going to overtime, though. When you have that many injuries, though, going to overtime,
that's what I said. You got to look. You have to look at the circumstance and what is happening, and how your team is. Do you think your team has a chance in overtime? Do you think your defense has been playing well? You got to look at all of that. So I'm not a guy that I favor one side. I'm always going for two, or I'm a guy that you always got to keep the extra point. You got to look at the situation. You got to feel how the situation was
going. I'm mostly going for two, but I'm also starting the situation. But I'm mostly going for two in that situation.
It all depends. Like, for example, is the quarterback you're playing against, is it Tom Brady? Do you want to play Tom Brady in overtime? No, absolutely not. No, go for two. Take whatever chance you got. Aaron Rodgers, you don't want to play Aaron Rodgers in overtime? He gets the ball first. He's probably going to score. You know, stuff like that, you got to assess the situation.
You gotta feel it out,
say if you have Aaron Rodgers, say if your quarterback is Aaron Rodgers.
I'm kicking the extra point. I'm taking overtime.
And at that point, you're like, all right, I trust my quarterback. So if we go to overtime, my quarterback is going to march us down the field. We're going to win this game.
This is what I'm doing. I trust my quarterback to get two and just end the game here. I don't want to go to overtime.
That's just so risky to put it all on one play, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
Also risky, you could say hindsight. You would also risky, say you lose the toss, our team scores a touchdown, you're done. Risky too.
That's what you gotta feel the situation. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you have a defense and you know you have the momentum right now, you have the better quarterback. It depends.
Let's talk about that crazy game yesterday. I don't want to go too deep into it, but the Jets and Bucks yesterday, the game that AB went rogue, right? He marches off the field, takes his jersey off and everything. Okay, let's say that situation. You know how the Bucks were coming back in that game? They were down. Let's say in that situation where they needed a touchdown to tie the game. They were down 7 points. So you could kick the extra point to tie the game and go to OT, or you take the two-point conversion of the game. If I'm the Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus the New York Jets, I'm kicking the extra point and taking my chance in an over.
Absolutely, yeah. So if you're the Tampa, so if you tie.
But if I'm the New York Jets and the other way around, I'll take the two-point conversion. I'm playing the Tampa Bay Bucks. I'll take the two-point conversion and try to win the game. But like, if I'm the Bucks,
I don't fault the Jets for trying to go for it on that fourth down play.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was the dumbest fourth down play I've probably ever seen in my life.
The call, we can talk about the call all day, but I'm talking about the decision to go for it. I don't mind the decision to go for it.
It was a 4th-and-3, and he ran a QB sneak.
He
ran a QB sneak on 4th-and-3, and you're down. They're down by what, 4?
No, they were up.
They were up by 4.
They were trying to ice the game.
They were trying to ice the game, so they ran a QB sneak on 4th-and-3.
Yeah, we could talk about the play call. I don't agree with the play call, but the decision to go for it, that's different. I like that play.
Yeah, they should have definitely.
Zach Wilson
was playing. He was playing out of his mind. He just kept the ball. They kept the ball in his hands, all right. But I'm saying, like, keeping his hands in a different way. Let him make a play, like a little hitch route or something. That was just dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if I'm the Bucks, I take. So Pierre, if you're the Bucks, you're trusting Brady to just get the 2-point conversion and not going OT?
I don't know. This is something to think about. Like, I just have to, like,
because you have Brady, bro. F it, man. The momentum is already on your side. You're playing the Jets. If you go overtime, you get that coin. You get the coin toss. You're gonna score.
But here's the thing, though. If you have Brady and you trust your offense so much, fuck it, go for it too.
I know, but then
that's all on one play.
That's all on one play.
And then, you know,
one receiver you throw. Yeah, you have Brady, but say if he throws it and the receiver slips, then what?
You could say, imagine you're in overtime and someone fumbles the ball.
More opportunities. You're getting three downs. You're getting first downs. Like, it's a game. It's not one play.
It's like
you're putting it all on one game. You're putting it all on one play.
You go back and forth on this topic. I guess it just kind of depends, but most of the time I'm going for two.
I'm not a guy that looks at if I was ever head coach, I'm not one of those guys where I have a set mind. I'm always going for two. I'm always kicking the extra point. I have to feel out the situation.
Here's the math to it, Tyler. The math is like, if you convert that two, you have a better chance of winning than winning in overtime. If you don't convert the two, you lose. But
it goes from a better percentage to a 0% chance.
But if you convert it, game's basically over for the most part. Like, if the other team's half time, game's pretty much over. You don't have to get overtime.
Don't convert it, the game's over regardless after that.
Exactly. But that's why the percentage to win is higher. It's risky, but dude, like, this is the NFL. But you gotta
that's what I said. You have to feel out the situation. If it's the Bucks and Jets, and I'm the Bucks and I have the opportunity to take an extra point, I'm going to overtime.
I don't know. Whatever. We're getting too much into this. Let's get back into the.
I like this because it's analytics. That we're talking about.
It is analytics. Is analytics.
I'm just bringing an example of because that.
These are Campbell did it this year. They did it versus Baltimore, right? They went for two. They had the lead, and then they kicked the field goal. Justin Tucker made that.
That was a situation that you're playing against a better quarterback. You're playing against a.
So you agree with that?
Well, Lamar Jackson. So yeah, you're obviously playing a better team. So all right. The Baltimore Ravens is a better team than us. So, hell, the situation like that, yeah, hell yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Or remember when they played Minnesota? They made that crazy comeback, at all momentum, get a touchdown, and then Dan Campbell trots out Jared Goff, makes a big throw, I think, to Kadarius Hodge.
Yeah, at the end, yeah. But, again, that's another situation. The Minnesota Vikings is a better team than the Detroit Lions.
And they were
I don't mind those situations.
Game. Yeah, and they were killing
I don't mind
game.
Those situations. But if you are a better team, like if you're like – say if my offense is the Rams, if I have the Rams right now, that's my team, I probably wouldn't do that because I probably wouldn't care because I think my offense would win in overtime.
I guess it depends, right? It depends on the coach because
– coach and player. Players and player, who you're playing against.
Yeah, but I think like coaches, like as a mindset, I don't think they necessarily care who's out there sometimes. Like, for example, John Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Isn't he does it with Lamar, he does it with Huntley. He doesn't care. It's his mindset. It's the way they are.
Let me ask you a question though. If you're playing against what's the quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Trevor Lawrence.
You're playing against the Jacksonville Jaguars and you're playing against Trevor Lawrence. Would you be scared to play Trevor Lawrence in overtime, or would you just go for two?
I'd be more disappointed. Why the hell are we tied with these
it's NFL, well, just like, it's the Jets. Look at the Jets.
That's why I brought the Bucks and Jets game.
Yeah, look at the Jets, man. It happens in the NFL. So, like, you playing against the Jacksonville Jaguars, there's no reason to be, like, saying, let's just get rid of these guys.
I want to end the game. I got to be honest, guys. That's just the way I think. I don't want to go to overtime. If the team stinks, and I have trust in my quarterback and I have trust in my weapons,
you see, Malcolm,
I'm going to send them out there and get that 2 points.
And some coaches think like this. Some coaches think like Peter. Like, me and you, I think we're more on the same page where, like, we feel out the situation. Pierre is like some of these coaches. John Harbaugh, I think exactly is like Pierre. I think they have the same mind. I don't give a hell who's on my team. I'm going for this regardless. And
I think I care sometimes on my team, but like if you're playing against a shitty team, man, and like you think you could kill him in overtime, why not just end him on this one play? You get your
so like Pierre. What's the situation? You're kicking extra point because every situation I'm bringing up, you're going for two. What's the situation?
I don't know. Like point? I have to like actually like watch the game and just see it. And
I don't think you have one. I think you're going always going for two.
Pierre sound like he would always go for two.
I'm trying to bring up different scenarios that like I could maybe crack Pierre to say extra point. I don't think there is one for Pierre. I think Pierre is always going for
if
two.
If you're going to go for it against the Jacksonville Jaguars, you're going to go
you're going for every time.
On anybody. You're going to go for it on anybody. There's nobody who you're saying this is going overtime. You're just like, hey, this.
Like, it depends. Like, say
this
like,
is roll it all, put it on 14 black.
It just depends. Like, if your quarterback is struggling during the game, maybe, like, I don't know. It just depends your injuries, everything the game. But most of the time, I'm telling you, I'm going for two. Maybe there's a time I wouldn't, but I'd have to, like, we text during games, guys. Like, I tell you guys, I go for it. Tyler's yeah, I don't know about that. I was like,
Campbell goes for it. I can't crack a scenario where I'm saying where Pierre's going to say extra point. I'm bringing up every scenario I could think of. Pierre's going to say 2 point.
I mean, I literally text you guys during the game, and you guys don't agree with me, and then Campbell comes out and goes for it. I'm like, I told you guys.
Right. No, and that's why I think when I bring up John Harbaugh, I think Dan Campbell's kind of in this criteria as well. I think Dan Campbell kind of thinks like Pierre.
And I love it.
Yeah,
I don't see him doing it every time.
Not every time. Me. Yeah, I mean,
if he clearly has a better team, I don't see him doing that.
Yeah. Why? I mean, you have a better team. Why? Yeah, why because go out and risk injury overtime? Why risk other things when you could end it right there? That's why I think,
because he could lose the game.
Okay, you also have a chance to lose in overtime, though. So just either win it or lose it. That's the way you go. And you take your win or you take your L and you move on.
I know, but I think the winning percentage in overtime, if you have the ball and things are your way, if you're the better team, better quarterback, I don't know. I just think it's different versus putting it all on one play.
We could debate on this all day, and I don't think it's going to go anywhere.
No, it's not bad. I like this. Yeah.
It's not bad at all, bro. It's just getting different perspectives.
No, exactly.
What would you do? What would you do?
Well, this is how I think of it, Malcolm. Like, you have a better chance at winning if you convert. Obviously, if you don't, you probably lost the game, right?
100% you lost the game.
But if you convert, game's over, right? And then especially if you have the better team, and you trust your quarterback and you trust your weapons, send them out there and go for it, right? You said if you're playing like a shitty team,
I don't see a Matt LaFleur doing that ever. In no situation. I don't see a Matt LaFleur ever doing that. Not with Aaron Rodgers.
I mean, I'm not.
I don't think Shanahan does that either.
I don't know about. I mean, those guys, they think different. I don't know. I don't know how.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I
watch all their games. Like, Matt, I don't know how they think with that.
I don't either. But my thing is, like, you have Aaron Rodgers. You just take your chance. If the team scores in overtime and beats you in overtime, it is what it is. But, I mean, it'll just be a hurt feeling just not converting that last play and losing to a team that you should have won. I mean, I just don't see, like, a Matt LaFleur doing something like that when you have Aaron Rodgers. But some coaches are different. You know, you have the John Harbaugh's and Dan Campbell's. Dan Campbell probably do it. Dan Campbell probably do 100%. Probably.
I love that, man. I love that.
Yeah.
Probably.
I mean, it makes it a lot more entertaining. I'll say that. I think blood pressure higher
makes your blood pressure higher too.
Yeah. I think it's, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Because I'm not one of those guys that always agrees with that. I'm a little more of an old head, and I like to sometimes just kick, because I don't take points for granted in the NFL. I sometimes don't take points for granted. I'm all down for field goals.
You don't take points for granted, but two field goals is one touchdown. You score touchdowns, forget field goals, right? Like, two field goals, basically a touchdown. It's six. So if you get the touchdown.
But you could. Like, but if you don't,
like, get it, okay. If you're like in a fourth and three or fourth and four, and you're playing a really good team, and I don't take the points, I go for it.
Yeah, I mean I think a lot of coaches think like you now, especially a lot of the newer generations ones. There's a lot of ones that are more aggressive, and I think it makes the game more fun to watch from a fan perspective. I think if you're watching from a viewer standpoint, I think it's definitely more enjoyable to see teams go for it, because field goals, I mean, end of the day, they're not fun. They're smart moves sometimes, but they're not necessarily fun. But watching an NFL game a lot of these days. A lot of coaches these days go for fourth downs, and I like that there's more of an aggressiveness than there was maybe a couple of years ago. I do like the upwards of aggressiveness, but I think there's just a time and place for it all.
Do you think these kickers are going to get devalued? We're using them less and less, man. It's coming down to extra points and a half and game winners.
Yeah, I've seen a skit. It was Fox. They did one for the Ravens because, you know, John Harbaugh was obviously one of those coaches that loves to go
and
for
you it. Have the best, and he has the best.
He has Justin Tucker. Yeah, yeah. No, and the skit was, you know, Jay Tuck and I don't know who their punter is, but they had like a fake, like, guys acting as them, and they're like, oh, hey, coach, is it for me time to go kick the ball?
I see that.
He goes, hell no, sit your ass on the bench. He's like, we're going for
it. I see that. I know exactly what you're
talking about. And then Harbaugh, he brings the punter out, and then he goes, Tuck's like, oh, he's getting an opportunity to kick the ball. And then he fumbles the snap or something. he goes, damn it, we're never kicking ever again.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, I seen that. That was hilarious. Wow, so like, do you think like they're gonna probably be devalued?
No.
Are you talking like price wise? Like you think they're gonna
price wise? Yeah, maybe. No. Like, I'm just asking the question. Do you like, as far as price wise, you think they're?
I don't think so, because I still think it's really important to have a kicker, because at the end of the day, that's a win or loss sometimes. Because like you said, yeah. I know we talk about going for two and we talk about going for the game sometimes, but there's going to be situations where you're only down 2 points or you're down only 1 point and you only need a field goal. So you're only playing for a field goal. So, you know, I still think having a kicker is really, really valuable, even though in today's NFL, there's a lot more coaches going for it and, you know, going for more 2-point conversions. There's still going to come a time and place where you're going to need your kicker at some point. So you want someone that you obviously trust. So I don't think kicker's price tag should be devalued ever.
I agree with that, man.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yo, now we're talking about kickers right now. Our kicker, Roddy Patterson. He misses his first field goal, 55 yards. Looked like it was towards a win. Didn't it was short. It was bad. It wasn't a good kick.
It wasn't a good kick.
It was rainy.
Short, yeah. 55 yards. This is his first miss. Are you guys worried? No.
I still think he's a good kicker, man. I mean, this was he's shown he could kick from deep before. It's not like, you know, he's only kicked chip shots. You know, he's kicked 50 yarders and he's kicked deep 40s and he's made them with range. Like, he hasn't really had a problem. And they've been really much all up the middle. I mean, kickers are going to have some shanks. They're going to be short on some opportunities. And I think even Aqib Talib mentioned, too, that Riley Patterson kind of had just a tough day kicking. He, even in warm-ups, didn't really look good in kicking. And I think that's just how the game was going, man. It just seemed like everyone was a little bit off outside of Amon-Ra St. Brown in that game. Like, there wasn't really there wasn't really a single player that just was doing anything on a positive, you know, aspect. Even Jack Fox had a bad punt.
Yeah, even I was just about to say that even Jack Fox had a pretty bad punt. It was bad.
Yeah.
It was probably the shortest punt I've probably ever seen. It was like 39 yards.
Yeah. It was just one of those days, man, where like almost everything was going wrong. And you kind of saw how the game was going after you got stuffed on that 4th-and-1. That's when Seattle kind of just took over.
I still want to see him bounce back. You know how confidence is, man. For some reason, 100%. Like,
especially for
you see, yeah, you see one miss, you see like one kick miss, and then out of nowhere, like, it's like for some reason they forget how to kick. You're like, yo, where, what the hell is going on? So I just want to see him bounce back. I think he will bounce back, but I definitely just want to see him. Well, I wanted to see how he would react after he gets his first miss. So I'm interested to see that next.
And we haven't seen that yet. So, I mean, he might get that opportunity next week for Green Bay. So, as of right now, we haven't seen that opportunity yet since that field goal miss. But, yeah, no, you're right, man. We've seen it where we thought we've had a kicker before. He gets on a groove, and then, you know, and they miss one, and then you get an Alex Henry situation. He misses 4 field goals in a game where you have an opportunity to win the game versus Buffalo.
Yeah. Don't bring that up.
I was at that game, so.
All right. You guys want to jump into y'all segments? Y'all oopsie doopsie and baller of the week.
Let's do it. All right, let's start off with Pierre. Pierre, who's your baller of the week? This is the easiest one ever. Who's your baller?
You want to play mad receiver? You want to play mad running back? You want to play mad kick returner? What do you want? Or punt returner? What do you want to do with them? You want to play mad quarterback? Fuck it. We can play mad quarterback. We can even maybe play mad safety. No, I'm kidding. But
it's possible.
Next Cordell Patterson.
Next Cordell Patterson, man. Let's go.
All jokes aside, man, I'm in Rod St. Brown, man. I mean, this kid, seems like we're talking about him every week. He had 11 targets, 8 catches for 111 yards. He was returning punts. He had 2 carries for 23 yards. Had a really nice touchdown run, 26-yard run. This kid is special.
He is a prime example of why you can't really look at the numbers in the combine too much. Too much at the combine. You can't look at it. You can look at it, but you can't look at two. But he ran a 4.6.
Yeah,
that's the reason why he went to the fourth round. He ran a 4.61. So you're looking at like a receiver 4.61. You're like, ill. You know, you're thinking like, all right, a receiver 4.61, ill. But he is a football player. He can ball.
Yeah, he plays faster than 4.61. I mean, just look at that run he had. He looked like a natural running back. He broke a couple tackles, and just the O line obviously made a really nice hole. He just had to break a tackle or two, and he was there. He scored, so.
I'm with you, Malcolm. We mention this every draft season. Like, don't get too caught up with the draft numbers. Like, you can get excited for them, but, like, some things are just guys are better at combine stuff and some guys are not as good at that type of stuff. It really ultimately comes down to what do they do on the football field, for me at least. And I think that's what it really should come down to for most people. Don't get too caught up in the pro day numbers. Don't get caught up too much in the Senior Bowl practices or the combine numbers. Like, at the end of the day.
Or the RAS numbers.
The RAS. Oh, my God. Like, at the end of the day, you should be watching what they did versus a division rival in a season game more than what they ran at a combine in boxers. Like, that's what's more important to me.
I got to be honest, though. Having athletes on your team is really important. I look at the RAS. Oh, yeah. I look at the combine.
No. Oh, I'm not saying don't devalue that. That's not devalued at any aspect. But at the end of the day, if the guy could play football, the guy could play football. Yeah. And I think sometimes these evaluators and GMs, they get a little too cute and they look at these numbers in these like RAS numbers. I don't know if it's not necessarily the RAS system they're looking at, but they look at the combine numbers, the pro day numbers, these individual meetings, workouts, and stuff like that. End of the day, sometimes you just got to turn on the film and see what they did on the football field in game action with the pads on, because that's ultimately what matters.
I guarantee also, you. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, I guarantee you, if he had a slow, like if he wasn't as good as he is now, and he's played like a rookie, played slow, like as far as like his production wise, they would bring that up. They'll say, "Oh, we drafted him. He ran a 4.6." You know, they would use that as the reason why he's not good. But yeah, this dude, he can just ball, man. That's why I say now all the time, you know, I'm big on numbers too. You know, I like to see the 40s. I like to see that stuff.
Ultimately, yeah, for sure. Ultimately, I am addicted to those stuff.
Me too. I'm just saying you shouldn't probably use that as your main tool when you're drafting these guys, because Monroe St. Brown dropped all the way to the fourth round because of this. And I think his value should be high too. Maybe end of round one he should have been drafted. So this is a prime example of why you shouldn't dig too deep into it.
I mean, Malcolm, I mean, I don't know if you guys remember during the draft, after they drafted Ifatu, Sheila Ford was talking to Brad Holmes, like, what about a receiver? And he's like, we like this kid from USC. I forgot how he said it exactly.
Yeah, he did. He said
USC kid was still there. And they kind of had a feeling like he'd be there, and they picked. They didn't panic. They didn't trade up again. They just waited for their pick, and they took him.
Yeah, because he got devalued because of his combine, his numbers.
Yeah. Also, when you look at the Rams too, they also look at play speed. I read a whole article about their drafting process and stuff. They track GPSs and stuff. And you look at Cooper Kupp, he didn't really have the best combine either.
I was just gonna literally say that.
But look at him now, right? I mean,
I mean that's a little different situation. Cooper Kupp came from a super, super small school. I don't even remember.
Eastern Michigan?
That's Max Crosby you're thinking of.
Oh, he went to Eastern something.
Washington or something like that.
I know it's Eastern something. I just can't remember.
It's somewhere in Washington, I believe. But Cooper
Kupp. Eastern Washington University. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I know.
Remember it's Eastern.
So that's a little different. I mean, small school kids, I think, always have that bit scare, because you just don't know what you're going to get when they translate to the NFL level. But when you get a guy that played in the Pac-12, I mean, I think that's something you got to take seriously. The Pac-12 is not a light division. It's not the SEC. It's not the Big Ten, but the Pac-12 is still a Power 5 school, or a Power 5 division, I should say. And, you know, I would say it's probably the third best division in college football.
I know, but like I said, man, it's the numbers. I
no, no.
Yeah, look, he ran. Yeah. He's what, 5'10"? Well, 5'10", 5'11", 5'10", ran a 4.6.
He ran a 4.51, it says here at the combine.
As pro day, he ran a 4.5.
Pro day, it's pro day, my bad, yeah.
Where did I see that he ran a 4.6, a 4.61?
Though it's an unofficial, so I don't know exactly where he ran, but it said here he ran a 4.5. Even the Lions have posted on their website. He ran a 4.51 at his pro day.
Oh. Okay, then take that away. Never forget everything I said.
No, just the thing is, when you look at his college tape, like, nothing was necessarily really special. Nothing, like, stood out. He was just, like, a solid football player, a good football player. And that's why he won the fourth round. Like, he wasn't super athletic. He didn't have crazy size. He's not the biggest guy. He's not, like, it's not like he's a flashy player. He just does his work. Like, he's a route runner. He does his work.
But what everything he's doing now, he did at USC. Like, he was getting carries in USC. So he's seen that stuff. He's seen his ability to make break tackles and make the first guy miss, and how he is in open space. He's seen all that. But
his film was good.
He still dropped. And
even like Brad Holmes, like, they knew he was going to fall. So it's something about, I don't know how these NFL GMs just know. Like, the Rams are really good at knowing stuff. Jordan Fuller, they had a fourth round grade on him. But they knew he was going to fall in the sixth round. They took him in the sixth round. Looks like a steal for them. They took him last year, right? I don't know what the hell they use or how they do this, but they know how to draft.
They could have drafted Amon Ra in the second round, and I would have been A-OK right now.
First round pick right now, bro.
Exactly. I'm saying, like, they could have drafted him in the second round. You know,
he's playing like a top three rookie receiver right now.
Yeah.
I think he is. He's behind Jalen Waddle right now.
Jamar Chase and Jalen Waddle.
Then you have Amon Ra St. Brown.
I mean, that's about it.
The guy everyone wanted, Devontae Smith. A lot of people wanted him.
Yeah.
So I mean, this was a stacked rookie class of receivers too. So that might have been another reason why he fell. But I mean, as of right now, compared to all what those guys are playing. And I know situation obviously matters, and Amon-Ra St. Brown is I wouldn't even say Amon-Ra St. Brown's in a great situation, but he's still playing like a top three rookie receiver right now.
And like, I think defenses are also starting to notice, and he's still making plays because he's the only guy the Lions have left. That's what's the positive thing right now.
That's the biggest, I think, like crazy thing about it. Yesterday or Sunday when, you know, playing that game, we had no other guys. I mean, we brought it up before the game. All the guys we had outside of Amon-Ra St. Brown probably had not even combined 10 catches out of all the other pass catchers. With the tight ends, he didn't have one reception from either of those guys, Ross, Travis, or Pickney. And out of the receiving core, out of Trinity Benson, Kadarius Hodge, Tom Kennedy, Malcolm Hart, whoever was out there, I mean, they didn't have double-digit receptions in the NFL. And he still found a way to have a huge game.
Yeah, it's big kudos to our play callers. They're doing a great job moving him around, not having him stationary and just in the slot. Not have a stationary just an outside. They're moving him all around. I think it's hard for defenses to key on where exactly is it going to be Amon-Ra. Is he going to be in the backfield? Is he playing tight end? I saw him play tight end. He played tight end last week. Amon-Ra, they're moving him all around. So that's huge what the coach staff is doing.
And he's a great blocker. He's one of the best blockers. He's small, but he plays bigger. Like, he's not like 6'2", 6'3". I think he's like 5'11", or 6', whatever he is. But he's probably one of the best blocking receivers on the team. The dude could block.
Yeah, yeah. I told you. I saw him play tight end.
Yeah. So he's just only going to get better too, man. This is rookie year. Like, what? Look out for this kid.
And then, you know, as far as what was I going to say? In the NFL too, you don't really see many guys shadow these days. Like, you have like your Jalen Ramsey, you have your Darius Slay. So that's another reason why it's even better for the Lions to get creative with this guy, like Amon-Ra St. Brown, move him in multiple different spots, get him some different matchups, you know, let everyone get a touch of this guy and see what he's all about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just kudos again to, like Dan Campbell, Ben Johnson. It's really taken a big hit. I mean, we've mentioned that every week, but since Ben Johnson has, you know, had more of a say to this offense, it's really getting a lot better, man.
Do you make him the OC?
I think that's a conversation we're going to have in the offseason, like a legitimate conversation.
I'm with you there.
Or do you keep things the same? Like would you be upset if they just said, you know, we're going to keep things exactly the same?
No.
See, I would have been a couple weeks ago, but at this point, you can't be. The offense has been a strength at the last couple weeks, and they're putting their guys in good situations to have opportunities to at least score points and give them a shot to win a game. Yeah. It doesn't matter who's playing.
Yeah, I think I'm comfortable with whatever they do. They want to give it to Ben Johnson, that's cool. If they just want to keep things as it is and just roll with it, I'm cool with that. I'm actually looking forward more to keeping everything the same and just rolling with it.
I kind of like just, keeping it within the organization at the very least. I don't know if I'm really into, like, getting an outside voice. Like, let's keep it within the organization. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
All right, so that was a baller. Tyler, who's your oopsie?
Play a sad song for you on the world's smallest violin.
All right, so our ball of the week, obviously Amon-Ra St. Brown, much deserved. Oopsie doopsie of the week. I mean, the Lions defense, I mean, they gave up freaking 51 points. There's not really a single player to really key in on to give this oopsie doopsie of the week because it was the whole unit itself. Oh, it was just really, really bad. I mean, and it was almost like what Malcolm said. It's kind of pick your poison. Do you want to get killed by Russell Wilson in the passing game, or do you want to get killed by Rashad Penny in the running game? They chose Rashad Penny in the running game, and that's exactly what they did. And there wasn't a really much of a winning scenario in this. So, I mean, I don't know what really went wrong because we haven't seen a bad defensive performance like this in a while. So it was a bit disappointing to see him take some back steps this week because they've been playing really well the last couple of weeks. And to have this type of performance for a team that was kind of struggling offensively, it was a bit disappointing this week.
Do you think it was just maybe it just caught up to him? Maybe do you feel like maybe everything just caught up to him?
It might have been, man. I mean, we're into week 17 right now. I mean, these guys have played a full season. A lot of these guys that were out there on defense, especially on the defensive line, guys like Charles Harris, Onzerike, McNeil, Austin Bryant, like these guys have all played a full season. I think it might just be at that point where, you know, the tires are getting a little tired right now. And I think it's just, you know, I think we're ready for the offseason, man.
I also think like injuries are catching up to this
team. That as well.
With the COVID and injuries and all that, because I mean, dude, you had Brockers out, you had Vitae out, you had two corners making like their third career or fourth career start against Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett. That's a big ask. You have Anthony Pittman and Derek Barnes, who both probably shouldn't be starting. Like, they're not ready to start yet. And they're both out there against Rashad Penny. I mean, it's asking a lot.
It is really
asking a lot. And the past couple of weeks, what they've done is impressive. But at some point, this was going to catch up to them and finally caught up to them. Because there's not enough talent right now. And the injuries and everything that's piled up with the COVID stuff. It's hard to win like that. Especially against like a team that's hungry for a win. Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. They've been struggling. They got embarrassed by Chicago. So they wanted to make a statement. And they did that against the Lions.
Yeah, I think it was really a tough task for a lot of these guys. Like, they had Ifeanyi Malefonu on DK Metcalf majority of the game, which is a very tough task. You know, DK Metcalf had the best of them. I will say this, though. Even though PFF gave Will Harris a hard time, he did a really good job against Tyler Lockett, man. Tyler Lockett didn't do much this game, and he was on Tyler Lockett majority of this game. So,
only had that one touchdown. Was that little swing pass?
I mean, it was like that little pitch pass that counts, which is, I think, is ridiculous on why it was
a little touch pass.
Yeah, it was a touch pass.
I think that busted coverage was on Will Harris, but I'm not 100% sure.
Which are you talking about when he was running wide open,
the double move, when they brought the zero blitz. The zero coverage.
That definitely was on Will Harris.
Yeah. Metcalf did the double. I mean, that's just a really nice play by DK Metcalf.
And Russell Wilson, man. He had a blitzer in his face. He had Dean Marlowe in his face, jumping up and everything. And he still got the ball over Dean Marlowe and got the pass to DK Metcalf. So I think that was a hell of a play by Russell Wilson.
And yeah, Russell Wilson and Metcalf. I think you got to take Aqib Talib's perspective. I mean, a veteran corner, a very good corner, potentially Hall of Famer. Even he was shook by the, like, DK Metcalf was able to run a double move. He goes, like, you know, I'm a corner. You're expecting just to have the ball out quick. You know, you're expecting a zero coverage blitz. The ball's probably just going to come out quick. There's not going to be really much movement from the receivers. It's going to be one-on-one. They're going to test it. But DK Metcalf had the balls to pull a double move, and he got Will Harris on skates.
Yeah. But every other touchdown, I think, was on Ifeanyi Malefonu. So, I mean, this is really tough. You're asking him to cover this beast, DK Metcalf. It's tough. Yeah, it's tough, man. But
it is.
Tyler Lockett didn't do much. So that's something to be a little encouraged a bit, you know.
I mean, I don't know, maybe. It's asking a big ask for those young corners. Even AJ Parker, he had like a little of a rough day to kind of.
I think he only gave that one big catch. Now it's Tyler Lockett in the slot that ran like a fade.
Those are the things that hurt you, though, man. Those big plays.
Yeah. The big plays hurt us all game, whether it was on the ground, whether it was in the air. Yeah. It got to the point that, Seattle, if you can't stop that running game, you're just going to have a long day regardless. Because you can't stop the running game, Russell Wilson is just going to have a field day. He's gonna pick you apart, no matter. If you can't stop the running game, you're just out.
The tackling was awful. Yeah, it's probably the worst of the year, honestly.
Tackling was a big part of it. There's just too many big holes, man. Too many big holes.
Yeah, they were moving us easily too. I mean, the Lions D-line.
It was like that Denver game, man. Just like that Denver game.
Yeah, I hate when our D-line gets moved. It's hard to watch.
Can't pinpoint which one was worse.
The only reason the Denver game wasn't as worse because we were playing Teddy Bridgewater and he didn't dash us as much in the passing game. Yeah. But as far as the running game, they moved our D-line.
I think the Denver game was worse because we knew the run was coming and we still couldn't stop it.
Yeah. It's a little unpredictable because you still have Russell Wilson and Metcalf and Tyler Lockett.
Yeah. So it was just like 30 yards here, 37 yards here. It's just too many big games.
It kind of looked like a prime Seahawks a little bit, like a years back Seahawks, like the good Seahawks teams, because we haven't seen that Seahawks team this year, really, honestly.
Yeah, and it had to come against us. That freaking sucks.
So guys, I was just thinking about this, like, randomly. Might have
been Russell's last game.
We've been talking a lot about wide receivers and safeties, right? With free agency. But man, what about I don't know who's exactly gonna hit the market, but what about getting a dominant interior defensive lineman? I know you drafted McNeil and Levi, but we say this, you can never have enough depth on a D-line. Because
we talked about before the show. I mean, I don't know if we necessarily agree here, but like, do you ever see Lee McNeil or Levi Onwuzurike being like elite?
It's too early. I don't know. It's way too early to tell.
I don't see it. I see him being good.
Elite. You can be a good football player. Like if you're good, that's fine.
A'shaun Robinson what is A'shaun Robinson? Is he bad or he's a good football player, right? He's
good. That's a good rotational piece. It's a good rotational piece. Like
Like a starter. Like okay, say you have like Kayvon Thibodeau-Hutchinson, then you have Romeo Okwara. I want a starter in there who could also affect the quarterback teams. Like hey man, those two guys on the outside are good, but this guy right here, he could give us some problems too. That's what I want. Like, not necessarily an elite guy, but I want a guy who could, like, you know, give a little juice from the interior.
I think the Lions could look at it in the draft with one of their picks. It's like an earlier pick. I'm not saying just like a day three, like throwaway pick. I'm saying like a legitimate early pick within day one, maybe day two.
If they draft another defensive tackle in the top two rounds, or not top two, just say round two, I think I'll rub the fan the wrong way.
I wouldn't care. Why? Win the football game in the trenches. I really wouldn't care.
Because I just think it'll rub the fan the wrong way because we used the second round pick last year on the defensive tackle.
We did.
I know.
Was it two second round picks?
No,
it was a second and a third.
Second and third. Okay.
I know, but Malcolm, say like a guy like just falls and you don't expect him to fall and he's sitting there like with the Rams pick, right? Say like DeMarvin Leal falls. Let's just say, for example, Leal falls. You have Hutch or Kayvon one or two, whatever. And then say, like, at 27, 28, wherever the Rams pick, I don't know, or 32, they win. Say, like, Leal falls, for example.
Yeah. If he's on top of your board, take it.
But there's also, it's kind of concerning, too, why, like, 31 other teams passed on him or 30-some teams passed on him. But, man,
I think it's concerning that a 111 teams passed on Amon Ross St. Brown.
There you go.
But 111 spots.
Yeah. Or Bonnie, you know, you've seen him drop.
Yeah.
To round five. Yeah. I mean, it's whatever. Whatever, you know, whatever they do, just follow your board.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if we get another defensive, I am all down. I mean, we saw with Brad Holmes. I mean, it wasn't all Brad Holmes. I hate to do this, but you got to give credit to Bob Quinn as well. But we saw what they did in the offensive side of the trenches with getting that offensive line all established pretty much. You know, we say at the very least you got 4 out of 5 guys, and it looks like we might have our offensive line just basically set at this point with Penei Sewell, Jonah Jackson, Frank Ragnow, Big B, and Taylor Decker. I think that's pretty much set. So you figured out that side of the trenches. If Brad Holmes says, I want to go into this draft and fix the other side of the trenches, you cannot be mad at that at one
hell day. No.
I'd be actually very excited about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
we saw it last draft. That was his approach.
First three picks, all trenches.
Exactly.
We're going to see probably the first pick, a trench pick, because, I mean, I think you have to take one or the other. Kyle Hamilton is a dog, but I don't think the positional value is, like, there.
Yeah.
Do you take a safety at two?
No. Taking Thibodeau or taking Aiden Hutchinson?
That would be worse than the Okuda thing, as far as position-wise.
So you get one of those guys, and like Pierre said, man, you could never have enough of these guys. And it's not like a cornerback where the corner is going to get 100% of the snaps. Like defensive linemen, these guys are moving in and out all throughout the game. And, you know, there's packages for first down, packages for second down, packages for third down. There's all these certain packages where, you know, even if we get another guy in the defensive tackle, that doesn't mean we're not going to play Lee McNeil anymore. That doesn't mean we're not going to play Levi Onwuzurike anymore. Like, these guys are still going to be part of the rotation, and they're just going to contribute as much as the guy that's coming in as well. So that's why I don't get rubbed the wrong way if the Lions did go that direction and took another trench player in the interior defensive line.
If they get somebody elite, man, that guy, man, I know a lot of people don't really look at interior defensive linemen as big key players, but those can change your defense. You have one elite guy. They're gonna make a lot of people better. It makes your linebacker better. It makes your secondary better. You can stop the run. You can plug up the A gaps. You can do whatever you want. And we've seen this in 2018 with Snacks Harrison. That's why I wanted that guy, the guy we in a couple of drafts ago. But yeah, we've seen it with Snacks Harrison because you get that one guy to plug up the A gap. It makes your whole defense better. Yep. So
Exactly.
If we can get an elite guy, that would be great.
That's exactly what I was going to get into. I wasn't going to say a cliche thing like Aaron Donald or something. I was going to say an example that you had on your football team just a couple years ago with Damon Snacks Harrison.
In 2018. Mm-hmm. Just got to look at 20. Don't look at 2019. Look at 2018.
And look at your defense and look at your defense and how they put in the second half of the season once they acquired him.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Even what's the name had a great second half.
Gerard.
Jared Davis. He had a solid second half that year because of Snacks Harrison.
The whole defense played really good. That was when the offense just lost everybody and Stafford was playing with that messed up back.
Yeah. And yeah.
We had Andy Jones starting. That receiver.
I remember. But yeah, man, a good defensive tackle, man, could take your defense along. Look what DeForest Buckner. Buckner. Look what he did to the Colts, man. He took that defense to the next level. They added him and took him to the next level.
And they've drafted well too. They got Darius Leonard. They got that linebacker.
What'd he pay?
Bobby
Okereke or not? No, what's his name?
Okereke.
You know what I mean? Okereke. I think it's Okereke or
Okereke. It starts with the O. Bobby.
I don't know how to pronounce his name. Sorry, Bobby. But,
I was saying Levi Okereke, our guy.
I think it's Bobby Okereke or I don't know.
Bobby O, man. Just stick with that.
Yeah, it's Bobby O, man. Bobby O. I like that.
He's a good linebacker.
And they got Cody Pay and Michigan Man.
They got the other kid they drafted. He was hurt. They took a chance on him. In the second round, the edge rusher. So,
who was that? What's the name?
Forgot his name.
I can't think of his name. I know who exactly you're talking about. Whatever. Yeah. Regardless. But no, it wouldn't run me the wrong way if the Lions took a defense tackle.
You win football games in the trenches, man. That's how you build. And like the Lions are still, look, Campbell signed a 6-year deal. This is still year two. I don't think they're going to be like all out, just go aggressive. I think they're probably still going to stick to DPA.
They should.
Like, if there's like two guys, they rated the same, one's a need, one is not. I think they take the need, right? That's how it works. So I think that's going to be their philosophy again. I don't think they're going to go out and like spend hella money. Maybe they'll give one big contract to someone, but I don't think they're going to give out like two or three big contracts. No, I think it's going to be kind of like similar to this year, but maybe go for guys who are like more proven and more healthy.
Let me ask you a question. Is there an elite guy, defensive tackle, that may hit the market?
Let me look at it right now.
This is a fun time, though, guys. Like, as an NFL fan, I would say as a Lions fan, this is when you're going to get football players in your team, and this is where you hope to take that next step as a football team and, you know, find more talented players. And this is, like, one of my favorite times. You know, we get into NFL playoff time. We're getting close to the Senior Bowl. We're getting close to that combine. We're getting close to the NFL draft, guys, and that's when it gets really, really exciting, man.
Tyler, do you think the Detroit Lions had a chance to sign a big player on defense? Say if like it is a defensive tackle on the market right now. Detroit has a shot at bringing him in? Do you think he would want to play with Aaron Glenn and
I think depending on the Dan money,
Campbell,
depending on the money, and
depending
the
on the money,
depending on the money, depending on the situation, yeah, it's possible.
So or do you think they had the crazy overpay?
I think you have to pay more than the Baltimore Ravens. You have to pay more than the Cleveland Browns or whoever was offering that other contract.
So Pierre has something.
Okay, Hold on. Give me a second. Give me one more second here. Hold up.
But I think one of the focuses that they're going to look in this offseason in majority is that receiving core. I think they have to improve that position. I think they just have to improve the offensive skill position because that's something that they're really lacking right now. You know, you got your running backs, you got Amon-Ra, you got Hawk. I think you need some more guys.
And you brought up receivers, and one of the big key free agents that a lot of people actually wanted towards
ACL. The guy you liked a lot, Michael Gallup.
Michael Gallup. Pierre liked Michael Gallup. I think we all like Michael Gallup.
Yeah, Michael Gallup was a good football player. But yeah, so that's a bummer.
Michael Gallup, man, I feel bad for that kid. He was going to cash out, and looks like he's going to have to wait for that check. I'm looking at the defensive lineman guys. I mean, there's better edge guys, but the Lions are drafting Calais Campbell, but he's really old.
Yeah, he's real old. He's probably like 37.
Sebastian Joseph Day from the Rams, he's kind of like you know, when you get those free agents who are moving up a little. He's trending up as a player. You have Austin Johnson. He's okay. Akeem Hicks. He's older. Solomon Thomas, Quinton Jefferson, Linval Joseph, Sheldon Richardson, Jerron Reed, Malik Jackson. The edge is a lot better. You have Akpa, Von Miller, Chandler Jones, Charles Harris, Dante Fowler, Harold Landry, Hassan Reddick.
Well, so, I don't think we have to worry about the edge. Yeah. I don't think we have to worry about,
the edge, right.
Not a luxury one, at least.
No, maybe bring Charles Harris back. I don't know how much he'll want, but he'd be a solid rotational piece. And if Roquaro's not ready to start, he can maybe start a couple of games for you.
With our first round pick?
And then with, yeah, so... But I'm looking at the safeties, man. Jesse Bates is a free agent, damn it, and I want him. He's going to be expensive,
like,
though.
Like, you know what would have been a sick pickup if this was last year and, like, he was a free agent this year? Like, Trey Hendricks. That's, like, that's what we need on defense. Like, have you seen Trey Hendricks on Cincinnati?
He's been a beast.
Yeah.
That's, like, that would be a perfect pickup.
That edge rusher, yeah. He came from the – he didn't come from the Saints, right?
Saints. New Orleans,
I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Marcus man, they got him for cheap, too, right? He didn't go too much, right? As far as like money,
he got like a decent contract, but like he's playing more than what his worth is right now, I would say.
Yo, all right, there's this kid that the Lions wanted last year, but the Saints tagged him, but he's a free agent again this year. It's Marcus Williams. His coverage and passer rating is 58.6. He's been a dog in coverage.
It's very good.
You know, AG was his coach, assistant coach in New Orleans, and the Lions.
That's a big possibility, yeah.
And Tracy Walker, I mean, he's good, but he's not like elite. Marcus Williams is more of an elite guy to me. So I could see them maybe like saying, okay, Walker, we're not going to bring you back. Let's bring in Marcus Williams.
I heard that. I heard that name being thrown around there too. As far as a potential person for Detroit because of the connections.
All right. Well, I think with that, I think we should save some of this talk for when we get into the offseason, because we're going to have a lot of this stuff and it's going to be a lot of fun when we get to more free agency talk, talking about some free agent guys that could fit for this Lions team. But you guys got a little preview for what we're going to be talking about in the offseason. We still got one more game, so we'll do that. But I hope you guys all enjoyed this. You know, we got a little bit of everywhere. We talked some analytics, which was great. We talked some injuries, talked about our oopsie, talked about our baller of the week, and talked about some scenarios that the Lions could do in this draft, and talked a little bit about free agency, what you can maybe expect from this Detroit Lions team. So this should be a really, really fun offseason, a really big offseason for the Lions as they're entering kind of phase two of that rebuild and trying to get more talent in this team right now. So stay tuned for all that, guys. We got a lot of stuff coming towards this offseason. So, but let's get through this game. We got Green Bay next week, so we'll have that preview out on we're going to record it on Wednesday, so it'll be probably on your guys' feed sometime around Friday, so look out for that. And with that, 5-star review, and I'm out, guys. Peace.
All right, guys. Hope you're all staying safe during this time. Hope you all had a great holiday, and I'm out. Peace.
All right, y'all. It's your boy, Malcolm, and I am out. Peace.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.